We're continuing today with our series with the New Mexico Environmental Law Center. I would like to welcome Bruce Frederick. He's a staff attorney there. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
Great to have you, as always, and great to hear about all the different things that the New Mexico Environmental Law Center is doing. One thing that you have been working on quite a bit is the copper rule, which Doug Mickeljohn talked about a little bit yesterday. What is going on with copper mining, and the rules around it here in the state of New Mexico?
Well, what's happened, historically, copper mining has taken place in New Mexico in Grant County, which is down by Silver City, for probably 100 years. It really took off in the 80s. There's about 20,000 acres that have been disturbed by three mines. Phelps Dodge owned those mines for a long time. Freeport-McMoRan, which is an international mining company, owns those mines now. It also owns mines in Arizona. And copper mines, and these are open-pit copper mines, they contaminate, or they can contaminate groundwater through a couple ways. One is production of what's called acid mine drainage, and that's just because these rocks that they take out of the ground contain a sulfite. That sulfite oxidizes to sulfate, and it produces sulfuric acid, and that leaches out metals, including heavy metals, creates very saline water and pollutes groundwater that way. And you don't even have to put anything on these rocks. All you have to do is bring them to the surface, expose them to air and water, and they'll produce this acid rock drainage. That can be prevented, or it can be prevented from polluting groundwater by lining things like leach dumps, tailings piles, waste rock piles, and so forth. Another way that copper mines pollute groundwater is that mine, or you extract the copper by creating these huge heap leach piles. You rain down this acidic solution on these leach piles. It leaches out the copper, and they collect most of the leachate at the bottom of those piles. But if they're unlined, which Phelps Dodge's piles were unlined, that just leaches right into the ground and eventually into groundwater. And as a result of these practices, not lining the piles at the Freeport's copper mines, you've got 20,000 acres of contaminated groundwater in Grant County.
What kind of testing has been done of this groundwater? Does it confirm that the water is in fact contaminated?
Oh yeah, that's been known for a long time. In fact, the state actually sued Freeport some years ago. It was under the when Richardson was governor, for damage to the groundwater, and that was all documented. It's very well documented, and this type of pollution lasts hundreds of years. You can't clean it up at all, really. You can mitigate it.
What does that kind of contamination do to human beings who drink that water, or to creatures who drink that water?
Oh, it has. It can have numerous health effects. Some of these chemicals are carcinogenic. Some of them just cause intestinal problems. The bottom line, well, some of them can. It's like drinking, almost like drinking seawater. So you can't. Heavy saline content is just not potable. Are potable, and so it's just bad for your health in general, even if it's not carcinogenic per se.
So there have been cases in which these companies have been sued, but they're still doing it. What's going on now?
Yeah, and the attorney general sued and got actually Freeport settled that case by paying $13 million. For contaminating New Mexico's aquifers. The ironic thing about the copper rule that the administration just passed is that it allows that same contamination for which the state sued Freeport. And it allows So the copper rule does two things. It legitimizes the existing pollution at Freeport's mines and allows more of the same at every single copper mine that exists now or that will exist in the future. And that's dangerous at copper mines per se. It's also dangerous because the act, the statute that these mines are being regulated are under, applies to other things besides copper mines. It applies to all other, most other kinds of mines, like molybdenum mines. It applies to federal sites like Los Alamos. It applies to sewage treatment plants. It applies to dairies and so forth. So if copper mines can pollute our groundwater, which the administration is saying clearly they can, then all these other facilities can as well because they're regulated under the same law.
Why would the administration want dirty groundwater?
You know, I can't figure that out. What I've seen is that the administration seems to have very little regard for the environment. They seem to have very little regard for the future of the state. They seem to be somewhat anti-science, as a matter of fact, and a little illogical sometimes. I've heard their defense of the rule, and it's based on a false understanding of the copper rule. I really haven't heard a rationalization for it that makes sense.
We're talking to Bruce Frederick of the New Mexico Environmental Law Center. So what is the Law Center doing to deal with this? Is it possible?
Well, we're doing a couple things. We, of course, participated in the rulemaking. We and the Attorney General participated in the rulemaking. We had experts testify that pollution at copper mines can be prevented and should be prevented. We argued the law, and the law is very straightforward. It says it requires the Water Quality Control Commission to protect groundwater that has a present use or a reasonably foreseeable future use. And that can only be determined kind of on a case-by-case basis. What the rule does is it allows pollution across the board. Wherever there's a copper mine, boom, you can have pollution. That's what the rule says. So we have a legal challenge to that rule, and we're in the Court of Appeals right now.
So the rule and the law are diametrically opposed to each other in spirit.
In spirit and not just in spirit, but the way the law is written, the letter. Rule is contrary to the letter of the law as well as the spirit.
And so this is now in the Court of Appeals, and we will get an update, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, it's been fully briefed in the Court of Appeals. And we should have a decision the Court of Appeals can take a year or two to make a decision.
So preventing this kind of thing, I mean, there's been very little talk about best practices in mining because the mining industry seems, as far as I can tell, and I'm no expert, but to have a kind of attitude of take everything out of the ground, leave a mess, go away to the next mine. What would best practices be? I mean, is it as simple as putting a liner, putting a tarp on the ground and putting your stuff on top of that?
In many cases, it is. I mean, the liners are not just tarps. They're pretty sophisticated synthetic materials. It costs a great deal of money to line these piles, and some of them are quite enormous. But it is far cheaper to line them, it's far cheaper to prevent the pollution than to clean it up after the fact. And what the mining industry has done and what the administration has done at the mining industry's request is it's basically codified the past practices that caused this pollution and the way that the mining industry justifies it and the administration accepts it is that they will pump groundwater, and when you pump groundwater, you pull groundwater towards a well, and so in a pit, an open pit actually is like a well in that it goes way below the water table, 1,000 feet, more than 1,000 feet below the water table, And so that pit has to be dewatered, which means pumping the groundwater that flows into that pit out of the well. And so this pumping draws water towards the well or the pit, and it has to be in order to, and this contains the pollution within that air, what's called the area of capture. And so the industry is saying we are going to pump that pit or these containment wells for hundreds of years if necessary. And that's the way they justify it. So essentially they're saying we're going to keep the pollution on our property even forever, essentially, which doesn't seem very practical.
Right. And there's no enforcement mechanism for the forever time scale.
Not for the forever time scale. In the immediate time scale, sure, the department says it will make them continue to pump that water, treat that water, dispose of that water, and monitor the groundwater. The problem is there's really no financial assurance and no express financial assurance required for that. There's no precedent for having this happen for a couple hundred years. We doubt that it will happen. And that groundwater, you know, things change over the course of 100 years. That groundwater will be needed in the future.
For other things besides.
For other things besides mining. Yeah.
So let's move on to other water issues. There's water rights issues going on, of course, in New Mexico, all over the place. What are some of the other things you're working on?
Well, we're working on a couple cases. One's the Aqua for Science case. That's named for the applicant in the case. It's called Aqua for Science, but it's really an application that was filed in substance by a company called Vidler Water Company, and it's a Nevada corporation, and it's in the business of buying and selling water rights, essentially flipping water rights like you would flip a house for a profit.
So you buy water right, sit on it, and then sell it for a higher price.
Buy low, sell cheap, or get a permit for as little cost as possible, and then sell the permit to a developer. In this case, the company filed an application to appropriate about 1,000 acre feet per year from an area near Cedar Crest on land owned by Campbell Ranch in the East Mountain area. Now, the significance of that is that Steve Reynolds, a longtime state engineer in New Mexico, had denied essentially the same application in 1987. And that led, because he denied that application and he defended that all the way up to the Court of Appeals, because he denied that application, PACO, which is a subdivision in the East Mountain area, has to import water from the Estancia Basin. And the reason that he denied it was that there's just not enough water in the Sandia Basin. It's called the Sandia Underground Water Basin. And fast forward 30 years, Vidler filed an application to do the same thing, and we didn't understand why they would file an application given that the state engineer had denied a virtually identical application 30 years ago. But the state engineer's staff seemed to support the application. They met with the applicants a dozen or so times in private, and we had to actually go to trial on that for about 12 days. We presented experts again showing that Steve Reynolds was right. There is no available and appropriate water in the Sandia Basin. We also pointed out several flaws with the applicant's model, which the applicant, of course, defended against, but the state engineer also defended the model. The state engineer's staff actually adopted the applicant's model, which probably cost upwards of $100,000 to create, but it obviously it served the purpose of the applicant. The state engineer, to his credit, and the hearing officer who presided over the case, to his credit, actually denied the application, and he denied that application based on arguments that we made, not that his staff made, and that was based on the past decisions by the state engineer, showing that there was no water available, and that there were huge drawdowns in the area from existing pumping.
So basically, let me just see if I got this right. You've got a private company that comes in, wants to get a permit for water rights for water that doesn't actually exist, then somehow take that water, which would have to come from who knows where, and then resell those permits?
Right. The company, you know, they wanted to get this permit, and the purpose of the permit of the water was to supply a new subdivision on Campbell Ranch, which has been trying to develop land out there. Paco is on Campbell Ranch, old Campbell Ranch land, San Pedro Estates, other subdivisions that people may be familiar with are out there, but there's a lot of undeveloped land still on Campbell Ranch, and it's been trying to get a development, trying to get water rights and trying to develop that land for a long time. So, and the proposal was over 4,000 new homes and an 18-hole golf course out in the East Mountain areas, and that's after the state engineer back in 87 said there was no water out there. In fact, he said you couldn't get a new water right unless you retired existing water rights.
So where does it all stand now?
Where it all stands now is Aquifer Science has to decide whether it's going to appeal the state engineer's decision.
But the decision was made in favor of you guys, namely protect basically protect the land because there's no water to be had.
That's correct. We represented, the Law Center represented about 50 landowners in that area throughout the East Mountain area who, you know, couldn't believe this issue was being brought up again. We successfully represented them in persuading the state engineer just to follow his prior decisions.
Now, are you working on other water rights cases?
I am. We are at the Law Center. There was a case people may have heard about. It's called the Augustine Plains Ranch case. An Italian speculator back in the late 70s, 80s, bought land in Catron County, which is near Dattle and near the very large array out there. And he filed an application, or his ranch filed an application, to drill 37 new wells, couple thousand feet deep, and take 54,000 acre feet of water per year and export that water to for use in seven counties in New Mexico or for use in Texas to comply with the Rio Grande compact we have with Texas. We represented about 80 folks in that area. That application was protested by pretty much everybody. There were about 900 protesters to that application. And we filed a motion to dismiss that application because it failed to comply with basic water law. Namely, it didn't tell the public or the state engineer how the water was going to be used, where it was going to be used, when it was going to be used, kind of basic elements. And that's called speculating in water, where you're just trying to hoard water for the purpose of selling it to the highest bidder. That's never been allowed in New Mexico under the law. And we just tried to remind the state engineer of that basic law. State engineer should have just outright rejected the application, but we had to go through a trial. We had to go a trial before the state engineer, then another trial in district court, and finally it was in the Court of Appeals.
Where does all this stand now?
So where it stands now is we actually we won in front of the state engineer. We convinced the state engineer that the application was invalid, and the state engineer denied the application because it didn't say how or where water was going to be used.
So you won.
So we won. We also won on appeal in the district court. The district court, Judge Reynolds, wrote about a 30-page opinion that was a very good, solid opinion as to why an applicant, anyone who wants to use water, has to say how and where and when they're going to use that water.
I mean, basically what we're looking at is the most fundamental element of life, water, and the continual effort in a capitalist society to privatize that and make profits off of it.
That's true, and people don't understand that prior appropriation, the basis of prior appropriation was to prevent, basically prevent capitalism from monopolizing the water sources in the West. It was to prevent Eastern and European capital from buying up the best lands next to rivers, next to lakes, and so forth, and holding that water hostage and then selling it to people who needed it to irrigate their land.
So what we're looking at, and this is a theme that keeps on coming up as we talk to people from the New Mexico Environmental Law Center, is this question of what the public's role is and how much the public is represented and who represents the public. I mean, I still remember reading that our government is of, by, and for the people. What does it look like to you?
Well, it doesn't look like that to me. In fact, the Copper Rule is a nice example of how the people are cut out of these processes and just allowed to... there's just a facade of public participation. We were invited to participate in developing the Copper Rule, and we were basically duped. We were brought in to be part of a committee, us and our clients. A rule was developed. It wasn't perfect, but it actually protected groundwater. People from the industry seemed to agree with it. People from the agency agreed with it, and we agreed with it. Upper management got a hold of that rule. They talked privately with Freeport MacMoran, and that rule was changed in substantive part to allow groundwater contamination, and that was a private decision between the Secretary of the Environment Department and Freeport MacMoran. I believe he was general counsel, actually, when that decision was made. The other, you expect agencies to represent the public's best interest. The Environment Department, unfortunately, in the Copper Rule context and in the Dairy Rule context, is representing industry here. And the reason I know that is because the Environment Department did exactly what Freeport wanted it to do and even allowed Freeport MacMoran's attorneys to write the Environment Department's what lawyers call pleadings in the case. The Water Quality Control Commission did what's called a Statement of Reasons. It's a couple hundred page document that says why it did what it did. It's like a court order. Freeport MacMoran's attorneys wrote that.
So basically, you've got government and industry literally working as one.
Hand in glove, I would say. And I've never seen it under any administration the way they do it, the way it's being done now. Industry folks are literally ghostwriting things for the agency, for the Environment Department.
So this is what we're dealing with, and you guys, New Mexico Environmental Law Center, are acting as advocates for the people.
We are. We're trying to open up. We're trying to bring transparency to the system. We're trying to bring also rationality to it and trying to get a perspective that's not solely the industry's perspective.
Bruce Frederick is a staff attorney at the New Mexico Environmental Law Center. They are on the web at nmenvirolaw.org. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
We're going to take a little break. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.